Hello, and welcome to this focus episode of How We're Wired. My name is Eva Higginbotham. I have a PhD in neuroscience, and I'm the producer of this series for the Bertarelli Foundation. These focus episodes are a chance for us to dig into more fascinating stories of our brains, how they work, and how scientists are studying them. In episode 7, we looked at autism and explored why so many autistic women and girls suffer from years of misdiagnoses, leaving them without the support and understanding they deserve. One common issue that autistic people of both genders can struggle with, though, is sleep. Starting from an early age, autistic children and later adults often struggle with their sleep, both falling asleep and staying asleep. We all know how rubbish it feels when we're running on empty. I myself am a pretty light sleeper and not the best at dropping off, especially if I'm feeling stressed. And now, one research group based in Boston is busy unpicking the tricky relationship between sleep and autism and creating technologies that might help scientists better study this phenomenon, as well as help autistic people sleep better.
I'm Dara Manoick. I'm a professor of psychology in the Department of Psychiatry here at Mass General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. So sleep used to be thought of as a passive restorative state, and we now know that it does a lot more. It clears toxins from your brain, fine-tunes metabolism, it regulates appetite and emotion. And we've now come to understand that sleep is actually, rather than being passive and restorative, it's actually an active period of cognitive functioning that enhances new memory. So sleep plays a very important role in memory, facilitates language learning in infants, enhances spatial navigation. And in my lab, we've been studying motor skills, and sleep really can enhance motor skills. You know, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of playing the piano and playing a piece and sort of hitting a wall. And then you come back after a night of sleep and you're miraculously better. Same thing with skiing.
Oh, wow.
This has all led to a paradigm shift where sleep is now seen as a period of active learning. Not all of our learning happens while we're awake.
So what parts of the brain are involved in sleep?
So in humans, the whole brain is active during sleep. In other mammals, aquatic mammals, birds, maybe even reptiles, some animals can sleep with one eye open and the corresponding brain hemisphere awake. If you think of migratory birds on long flights, they can keep one eye open and one hemisphere awake. Or if you think of ducks, the duck on the outer edge of the group will keep one eye open, you know, to be alert and vigilant for predators, while those in the middle can safely and confidently keep both eyes closed and both hemispheres asleep.
So if the whole brain is active while snoozing, what stops us from noticing every little thing in our environment when we're asleep? Well, that's where the thalamic reticular nucleus comes in. You might remember the thalamus from previous episodes we've had on the senses. It's involved in relaying sensory information from the body up to the decision-making part of the brain, the cortex.
Information from the senses goes to the thalamus, but to make it to the cortex, anything that wants to talk to the cortex has to go through the TRN, any sensory information. So the thalamic reticular nucleus, or TRN, is a gatekeeper of sorts. It prevents the relay of sensory information to the cortex during sleep, or selectively prevents, to prevent arousals. And during wake, it's also playing a very important gatekeeping function. It is also inhibiting those same thalamic neurons, those same thalamic cells from sending information to the cortex, so that you're not bombarded, you're not overwhelmed. It sort of decides what's relevant and what isn't, like a good gatekeeper. And so it lets in only what's relevant and suppresses information that's going to be distracting.
So that's like if you're wearing something that's slightly itchy, at first it feels itchy and not good, but actually you can get to a point where you don't even feel the itch.
Right.
You've forgotten about it.
And that may not happen as well in people with autism.
Mm-hmm.
They may not habituate as well to those because they're not blocking redundant and unnecessary sensory information from reaching the cortex, and that could lead to their sensory sensitivities or contribute to their sensory sensitivities. The hypothesis that we're following in our lab is that disturbed sleep may have contributions from a faulty or a leaky thalamic reticular nucleus.
So potentially, one of the reasons autistic people might struggle to stay asleep is that their TRN is letting too much sensory information up to the cortex, making them too aware of their surroundings and causing them to wake up. But the TRN also has another important job that might be relevant here. It creates a special type of pattern of brain activity during sleep called sleep spindles. Dara explained that there are two types of sleep: rapid eye movement, or REM sleep, and non-rapid eye movement, NREM sleep, I guess. You've probably heard that we do most of our dreaming in REM sleep, when our eyes move, well, rapidly, our heart rate and breathing increases, and our brains light up with activity not too dissimilar to when we're awake, despite our bodies being paralysed. It's during REM sleep that scientists believe our emotions are processed and stored as memories. You can check out our Focus episode, Why We Forget, if you want to hear more about memory formation and failure with Harvard's Daniel Schachter. We actually spend most of the night in non-rapid eye movement sleep. And before we get into that, we need to talk about brainwaves. There are about 86 billion neurons, or nerve cells, in an adult human brain. And they communicate with each other via electrical impulses. But they don't just fire off impulses randomly. Scientists have noticed that, actually, often neurons fire in synchrony with each other, and this can produce rhythmic patterns of electrical activity across the brain, otherwise known as neural oscillations, or brainwaves. And your brain is producing brainwaves all the time, even when you're asleep. In fact, to some scientists, it's when you're asleep that your brain is producing its most interesting waves, and these are correlated with the different sleep stages, including the three types of non-rapid eye movement sleep. The first stage is a transient falling asleep phase, lasting only 5 to 10 minutes as you nod off. Your heart rate slows down and your body relaxes, but your muscles may twitch, and your brain is actually still pretty active, producing alpha brain waves. In the next stage, NREM stage 2, your body temperature drops, your eye movements stop, and your brain starts producing rhythmic bursts of brainwave activity, those sleep spindles, which are thought to be important in memory consolidation. More on that later. Lastly, we have deep sleep, where your muscles are completely relaxed, blood pressure drops, and your brainwaves are slow and rhythmic, called delta waves. Throughout the night, your brain cycles through the different sleep stages, producing different brain waves.
So we recently published a paper looking at children with autism, a home sleep study where a technician went to their home, put some electrodes on their head to measure sleep. What we see is that during a specific sleep stage, there are reduced spindles, which implicates the thalamic reticular nucleus, which generates spindles. We also see something very interesting, which is that there's abnormal synchrony between spindles and slow oscillations. These slow waves, these rhythms, these cortical rhythms are misaligned with the thalamic spindle. So the timing is off.
I see. So instead of going from part one to part two to part three all at the right time, you've got one bit that's not happening when it's supposed to be.
They're not lined up properly, and they're not as consistently lined up. So normally, sleep spindles should peak in the upstate, in the upswing of the slow wave. And the timing is different in autism.
So knowing all of this, is there anything that we can do to try and improve or enhance sleep for autistic people or people in general who are experiencing disturbed sleep?
So drugs are one option and non-invasive brain stimulation is another. And in my lab, Brian Baxter is using closed-loop auditory stimulation to try to enhance the rhythmicity of this dialogue between the thalamus and the cortex. So what that involves is detecting in real time slow oscillations and playing a brief sound, and this seems to align cortical rhythms if it's well-timed. So it aligns spindles with slow oscillations, and these coupled events, these paired spindles and slow oscillations or slow rhythms, are highly correlated with memory consolidation. So we know they play a functional role and that their alignment is very important.
So it's like a starting gun, and suddenly everyone's together again if they've gone slightly out of whack.
Just like the conductor of an orchestra will get the violins and the harp to play in sync.
So Dara and her team have been busy creating devices that people could take home and wear when heading to bed, which would first measure the person's brain waves and then play rhythmic sounds at just the right moment to synchronise them. If this asynchrony is part of the cause of disrupted sleep in autistic people, it could be a great non-invasive treatment to help them rest. But Dara also mentioned that the sleep spindles are correlated with memory consolidation. And before you ask, at the moment, studies don't show that autistic people with asynchronous sleep spindles have worse memories. So, as Dara put it, they are still scratching their heads about that one. Nevertheless,
we think that what happens during sleep, or specific periods of sleep, is that memory is transferred from a deep structure called the hippocampus to the kind of outer area of the brain, the cortex.
That's Dr. Brian Baxter, who Dara mentioned earlier. He's a member of her research group. Now, we talked about the hippocampus in our episode on memory, called How We Remember, earlier on in this series, but it's essentially a seahorse-shaped nugget of neurons deep in the brain.
And we think this happens during sleep, and specifically during non-rapid eye movement sleep. And what we look at is different brain activity during non-rapid eye movement sleep to see how this brain activity relates to memory consolidation while the person is sleeping.
And I guess we've all had, well, you know, at school, teachers would say to you, you know, don't leave all your studying to the last minute and revise till 4 a.m. You know, you need to sleep. Is that where that comes from? The idea that like, oh, you need to sleep on it and then you'll remember it better.
Yeah, yeah. So if you sleep, you'll remember things better. It prevents interference of new memories as well, and just generalization as well. So you can remember specific facts, but generalizing about them, sleep helps in actually generalizing about them or problem solving.
So how do you study this in the lab?
So we have participants come into the lab and perform a memory task. So the task we usually use is a procedural memory task. So basically it's tapping a complex series of numbers. And we have them do that over and over again until they're quite good at it before they nap. And then we have them take a nap. So we put our EEG equipment, which records brain activity non-invasively, we put that on them. And then we have people just take a nap in a bed in the lab. And after that, we have them get up, get refreshed, and then we have them do the task again. And we find that they improve on this task after sleep, whereas if they were to be awake that entire time, they would not improve as much.
That's amazing. So actually, even just a small amount of sleep improves memory.
Yeah, and we find comparable amount of memory improvement for a nap as we do with a whole night of sleep.
And are there ways we can sort of optimize our sleep in order to make the memory consolidation bit of it better, other than just actually going to sleep when we should?
So that's one of the things we're actually trying to figure out is, are there things we can do during sleep to improve memory? So we're trying to develop interventions for that. So we play quiet sounds during sleep, and that leads to brain activity that we think underlies this memory consolidation.
Because I was going to say that we'd think that, oh, you need a good night's sleep, let's make everything quiet, you know, rather than you need a good night's sleep, let's play some sounds at you. What kind of sounds would you be playing?
Yeah, so we play pink noise and very brief bursts of that, so 50 milliseconds. And pink noise is similar to what you might think of as white noise, which is just a shh sound. And pink noise is a little bit more pleasant, but it still sounds about the same as that.
This is pink noise. As Brian said, a lot of this research is based on nap studies, where people come in and take a nap while their brain activity is monitored. And I was still a bit jet lagged.
So first thing we'll have you do is get comfortable, change into some scrubs so you can sleep in those rather than your daily wear. And then we'll put the EEG cap on you. So that consists of a cap that has 96 electrodes, and we're going to put gel in all of those electrodes. That'll cover your whole head. The gel makes a nice connection between the electrode and your scalp so we can see your brain activity.
Cool. All right. And so the first step, I think, is lunch, right?
Yes.
Have lunch, get sleepy, have a nap.
Yeah.
Ryan got busy sticking electrodes all over my head with the help of a colleague.
First off, we're going to measure your head.
Okay. Is it okay if we part your hair a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to strap the chin strap right now.
Okay. That's deal.
That's okay. It feels pretty tight.
We're just putting the gel in and then moving the these plastic syringe tips around to move the gel and make a good contact with your skin. All right, would you like to see your brain activity?
Oh my God, I would love to see my brain activity.
So that's what's happening right now.
Wow. So there's like lots of lines on a screen wiggling up and down, like 20 lines at least. What am I seeing?
Yeah, so you're seeing your brain activity right now across your entire head. So each line is a different electrode. And the most obvious thing here, I think, is if you move your eyes left or right, or if you blink, you can see very large movement of the lines. And your brain activity is lower amplitude than that. So if you just rest and don't move your eyes, you can see the brain activity, but it is not as clear as eye movements when you're waking. When you're sleeping, though, we do see very large deflections like you see in your eye movements, and those are the slow waves.
Wow.
Okay, so I am wired up, and my mouth is actually slightly restricted because I've got tape holding some electrodes to my chin because they're going to be measuring my chin movements while I sleep. It's kind of a smallish room. I'm wearing some stripy pajama bottoms and I'm ready to go try and take a nap.
How did you sleep?
So I think that for the first about 30 minutes, I dozed. And I definitely had that experience when you kind of, you're thinking, you realize that the thoughts you're having are not sort of sensible. And so you think that must have been some part of a dream. But after about half an hour, I definitely just started getting more and more awake. So I don't know if that, does that count as sleep? If you can't, is dozing a category of sleep?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I actually saw looking at your EEG that you were falling asleep. So you went into non-REM stage one and a little bit of non-REM stage two sleep. So we saw some of the slow oscillations that we talked about earlier, as well as some of the sleep spindles.
I was very comfortable in the bed and with the electrodes on my head, but I didn't fall deeply asleep like I might if I was at home. Is that one of the things you're hoping to achieve then by having these wearable devices people can have at home?
That's that. What you've just described is that one eye opened effect when you're in an environment that's new. In sleep research, we call it the first night effect, because when you're in a new environment, it takes you a while to feel safe and comfortable. And that effect may be exaggerated in people with autism. So it makes doing these studies at home even more important.
And how far along are you in developing these wearable devices that you hope people will be able to use?
Yeah, so we're currently testing devices that are available. We've tested three right now, and we're hoping to roll this out and start doing experiments in the home with people with autism over the next couple of months.
So perhaps it won't be too long until devices like these are available to help autistic people get better sleep, or even help with learning and memory consolidation when practicing for something like a piano concert. Thanks so much to Dara Manoic and Brian Baxter for speaking to me for this episode. We are taking a short break for the holidays, but we'll be back in early January to hear all about the science of love. I'm Eva Higginbotham, and this is How We're Wired. How We're Wired is a Fresh Air production for the Bertarelli Foundation. It's produced by me, Eva Higginbotham, and executive produced by Neil Cowling and Michaela Hallam. Follow now for free so you never miss an episode.